Okay, welcome everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and get started here. It's my pleasure to introduce Ofer Bergman from Bar-Ilan University. I actually have known Ofer for many years, time going way back for personal information management stuff, and he's continued doing it for all these years. And so he just has a new book out with Steve Whitaker, who some of you may know. And so he's going to come here to talk to us about, I guess, mostly about the book, yeah? And I think the work around it. So I'll turn it over to you. Oh, and one thing, for those of you watching online, I am monitoring that. So if you have questions that you want to ask, just write it into the chat box on the online bit, and then I'll be able to translate that back to Ofer afterwards. So,
all right. Thanks a lot, Ed. So I'll start with the questions thing. So basically, the book is like from a bird's eye view. I'll talk about the book from a bird's eye view. I'll talk not specific about specific research, but about many researches that Steve and I did together, and we summed it up to a book. It's like a puzzle, and I want you to see the big picture. So if people have questions, like they don't understand something, fine, go ahead, ask me, people online too. But basically, I'll have time in the end for questions, so it's best that you just write down and I'll answer everything you want to. So my talk is about personal information management, which is basically stuff we keep for ourselves and later to retrieve later on. This poor fellow here is like put something in his drawer and now he's trying to find it on computers and mobile devices. We're talking about files, email, web pages that we've seen and want to return to, tasks, contacts, notes, etc. Now, although millions of people manage their personal information each day, several times a day actually, this is a relatively young research. When I came in the millennium year, I came to my I wanted to do a PhD. I went to my supervisor and I said I wanted to do it about personal information management. He looked at me like baffled and said, "Are you sure? Are you sure there's such a research field?" So I said, "Well, I think there is." And so he wasn't very happy with the answer. So he told me, "Okay, give me three papers. Give me three papers published about personal information." And I managed to give him these three papers. But if he asked for like 5 or 10, I wouldn't be standing here in front of you. So, but this changed a lot. Ed mentioned the research community. There was like a meeting in Seattle, I think it was like 2004, right? I met Jamie, Ed I met a bit later. And Sudume, and now there's like about 100 researchers, including PhD students, in a community. We're publishing several papers each year. We have like workshops and books. It's not the first book to be written. Jamie and William, wrote a book, edited the book, and then William Jones wrote several books afterwards. So. But although this is a relatively young research, just in the beginning we found lots of problems. These problems doesn't have to do with a specific format. It doesn't have to do just with files, just with emails, or just with web pages. It's all around. And there's the first notion, I think, that all researchers, or at least they ask, just feel when they go to participants is guilt. I started my PhD and then I asked people, okay, are you willing to be interviewed or can I look at your stuff? And they said, sure, but my stuff, just know that my stuff is a total mess. They all feel that it's their own personal problem. And if they feel it's their own personal problem, I'm giving you a hint here, it may be a design problem. Yeah? If everybody feels that something's wrong with the way they do it, maybe it's a design problem. And I'm just saying that because there's millions of people who retrieve the personal information and store and retrieve the personal information many times a day. Even small changes can make big difference, okay? I'm not talking about small changes here in this lecture, but just know that even small changes can make big difference. So who should be the blame for all these problems? Many scientists say that folders are to blame, okay? I'll start with a brief history of folders and then get to the problems. So it started, the folder started with a paper folder metaphor, but unlike paper folders, you can put folders inside subfolders inside folders, subfolders, etc., etc. They started back in the 60s with the directories, like you have like a place to put your files, for example. And then in the 80s, it became like the visual metaphor. We discussed this, and said it's, yeah, it's just a metaphor, but people feel that it's, you know, it's there. Like I put the file inside the folder. I drag it from this folder to that folder. I drag it to the garbage bin. It's like a metaphor. I don't know. It may speak to people. The thing is that it didn't really change for the last 35 years or even more. So, and people really think that it's, you know, out of date. There are also concrete problems. A kid, just in the early days of computer, and Mellon before that, they just say that folder height. If you have things on your desktop, you see them. They remind you of themselves, okay? But if it's hidden in a subfolder under a folder, then you know you don't see it. You're not, you know, it's out of sight and out of mind. Another problem is that it's hard to categorize files and photos, folders. It doesn't really, you know, fit into categories. But even if you do, this category can change over time. You put it in a folder with a specific name. And then the, you know, the use of the folder change and it's out of date and you are trying to get to it. But the big problem is the last one. This is the very simple problem. You put something in a folder 2 months ago, 2 years ago, and then you want to return it. And unless you remember exactly the whole path, the exact path, to where you put it, you just don't remember where it is. Do you want to pass this around, the book?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, thanks. All right. So, in contrast, search is much more flexible because you can put any attribute you may happen to remember in the search box. Just type it in, and you get results. And really, people feel that there's no need for folders because you can just search for it later on. Okay, so I'll just go through the definitions of navigation and search because sometimes it gets confused. Retrieval is like for every, you know, possible sort of way to get to the information items. But navigation is really going down the folder hierarchy, folder by folder, until you reach the folder you put your stuff in. And then, you know, you look for it there. Search, on the other hand, is using a search box, which, you know, you type in something, any attribute, and then you get the search engine is working, and you get the results back. So it's very different sort of retrieval methods. So there's a strong notion that search will replace folder navigation, similar to the way it did in the web. If you remember the early days of the web, there was like these mega sites. Yahoo had like a directory under directory that tried to map the whole web. And there was, on the other end, like search engines. And I don't have to tell you who won that race. So the feeling was that the same thing will happen in PIM as well. And there's several people who said that. On the other hand, Bauer and Nardi in 1995, when they looked at the Mac users and PC users, they saw overwhelming navigation preference. Now, this was criticized, of course, just a year later, Fertig and his co-authors. They say, do you remember which operating system was in 1996, 1995? It was DOS, okay? So we were saying, okay, come on, you're in the early 90s. Such a technology doesn't really work now. It's very slow, it's difficult to use, there's no full text, there's no indexing, it just goes file by file, it's very, very slow. There will be a technological change, then there'll come a preference change. People will prefer searching when search will be better. And this technology change came around 2007, 2008. There was like a very big improvement in search engines. They started using index, which, you know, index all the time, so it doesn't have to work through the files, for example. And then on the same machine, it was like 1,000 times faster. This also allowed much better interface because you don't have to be concentrated about, you know, making it easy for the computer. You can make it easier for the user. There was a cross-format search. This, I think, is after stuff I've seen. Did with Sue, and also an incremental search. You type, and it starts searching all the while. So much, much better search engines. And what we wanted to do in this paper, this is like the first piece of the puzzle I'm showing, is we wanted to see whether Fertig's prediction was right, whether there was like improved search engine lead to a preference of search or at least much more search. So Steve and I like to work hard to do the multi-method approach. Multi-method approach is like we tested it in two different ways, the same research question in two different ways. One was a large scale study in the Mac environment, Spotlight versus Sherlock, which is the old Mac search engine, and a long-term study, 7 months, which we had people using Google Desktop. We asked them to use, they were using Windows XP. We put Google Desktop on their computers. We asked them to use it for some time and to search, just to search for things. And then we said, okay, the experiment is over, thank you very much. And of course we lied. We came back after 7 months and we saw what's happening. So what were we looking for? Basically, we were looking for an estimation of search, the percentage of search out of all retrievals. Okay, the estimation was highly, we checked the estimation, it was highly reliable. So this is, you don't know the answer, but for the people who read the paper, but those who didn't, what do you think happened there? What's like your estimation regarding like new search engines and old search engines? Like how much percentage of search people used?
So when you say old search engine, you mean just like grab? Like just a simple
like Windows XP, like yeah, that it took like over a minute sometime for an answer, and the interface wasn't very good, as opposed to like things like Google Desktop, which was, it's really like a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So just and people online as well, they can guess.
1% for the old and 40% for the new.
1% versus 40%. Okay, like 39% improvement. Another guess?
5.
1 and 5.
How about 0?
0? No such a thing. Very skeptical. Do you want to see the real answers? Okay. So basically, it made no difference to people whether they used a very new and sophisticated search engine or just an old one. No significant difference either with both experiments. Now. Yeah, but you guessed right, both of you. So right on. So this, one, there's something that was new and something that was repeated in previous paper. Many papers saw navigation preferences. It's not just Boninardi and Barrow. It's all, you know, each year we've seen papers like this. And especially, I want to, the perfect search engine was a great paper. And this paper as well, this one is like logged. This is not estimation, and it's also very new with very young students and a better version of Spotlight. And then the log said around 4.5% of searches. So why was that? And this is compared to navigation, which is steadily over half, you know. The new thing about it is that the search engine didn't make any difference. And why was that? Because people search only as a last resort. They said that, when you ask them, when do you search? They said, well, when I don't know where the file is. So, and one of the participants also added, da, you know, what are you asking me? I wanted to, the da to be in the paper's name, but didn't make it. So if they have the chance to choose, they choose navigation and not search. So basically, we can look at search like a fire escape. Okay. Now, in case there is a fire, you want the best fire escape around. So I'm not underestimating the use of search. If you lost for fire, you don't know where it is. You really want the best search engine around to help you get to this file. But if it's people prefer navigation, it's not going to solve the big problems. You know, if it's just around 5%, it's not going to solve the big problems in PIM. So this is like a tentative conclusion for that. Now another problem with folders. Folders, you know, they store in one particular place, but an item can belong to several categories. For example, I get like a presentation for a conference from a PhD student of mine. How should I categorize it? Under the student's name, under the conference name, under the topic's name, you know, it can go either, and if I put it in one place, it's out of sight in the other places. Okay, if I search for it there, it's not there. So the simple solution for it is tags, because it allows multiple classification. You can put on this presentation or email, you can put the name of the conference, the name of the city the conference is in, the name of the PhD student, and you know everything. You know, you don't have to miss anything. You can put everything you want. And again, because it makes so much sense, there is a wall-to-wall agreement. And again, this happens also because of the huge success of tags in the revolution of Web 2.0. Okay? It's massively used there. But again, a tag or folder preference was not tested systematically. What I'm saying systematically is in systems that have, you know, allow both ways, to use both ways, and that people are aware of both ways. You have to know, make people aware. And this is what we did in the second paper I'll talk briefly about. And again, we used the multi-method approach. We tested it in Gmail, you know, labels. You can use labels as tags, and you can use them as folders, and in Windows 7. And basically, we told people, you know, about multiple classification. Some of them in the Windows 7 experiment, we asked them to use only tags and to use multiple classification, and they did so for some time. And again, we said, okay, the experiment is over, and again we lied, and came back to them and tested what we see. But most of the result I'll be talking about is about Gmail, because they did more tagging there. Okay, so there was in Gmail there was a strong preference to folder over tags. In the Windows 7 experiment, they used very little of tags, so I won't talk about it. Even when using tags, in 92% of the time, they used only a single tag, so there was no multiple classification. They use it mostly to keep their emails in the inbox, which people sometimes like. And even for the small fraction of times that they did store using multiple tags, they didn't use it in the retrieval. They used only a single tag, and it was the same tag because, you know, it worked, so why change? So again, like a tentative conclusion is that tags may be useful, but it's not going to solve the big problems in PIM. And then I'll quickly talk about group information management. Group information management, see if like a couple of people work on the same paper, for example. Okay, they have two different ways to work on it. They can use email attachments, send to each other, or they can put it in a repository, like on the cloud, a single repository, and all use the same. Now, there's two advantages. One is it reduces storage space, but storage space, it's not very important. It's very cheap these days. But it reduces management. If one person manages for a group of 16 people or a group of 60 people, then, the other people have better use of the time, They can make better use of their time. And that's why organization advise workers to share the file, and it's considered more advanced. Some people think of it like people who send emails, email attachment as dinosaurs, okay? It's cloud, it's advanced, okay. So we looked at this only through the retrieval perspective. There are other perspectives to these differences. If you want, I can talk about it when you ask, but this checked only the retrieval perspective. So we basically asked people to retrieve shared files, files that the author was different than the user. We had a lot of participants. We had money for it. We got a Google grant for it. And basically the results are that people preferred to use email attachment to single repository. They did use it for a bit, but most of them, most of the time, used email attachment. And right they were, because they failed to retrieve the files in about a quarter of the retrievals. They know it was there, because it was on their computer. We found it on their computer. But they didn't know where it was. So the problem wasn't the cloud. When it was when they created the folder, they found it 95% of the time. But when it's somebody else created the folder, 28% of the time they failed to find it. And why? Because it's difficult to think the way other people do. Okay? It's just getting into their head and think, what would this guy, Jeff, think, you know, how, where would he put it? So this is about Jim. So I'm getting back to search navigation preference, especially navigation, polar navigation preference. So there's another question, but why? Why people prefer navigation over search? Why is it? So many people say, many people don't think about it, but others think it's just a habit. You know, when you have a child, you teach them how a computer works, you say, ah, there's folders, it's like a drawer, and then there's like drawers inside drawers, et cetera, et cetera. This is the way you teach them, so that's the way they behave. So this is a habit. But we thought otherwise. And what we thought is that people, and we tested it in two experiments. One is a cognitive study I'll talk about, and then the other one is neurological. The first thing is has to do with what the context of retrieval. You usually retrieve something in the context of other work. You don't retrieve it and then you finish your work, that's it. For example, you have like a chemistry student, she's doing a seminar work, now she wants a file containing the table of elements. So she leaves her seminar work, goes to the table, you know, find this file, and then if she's, if the retrieval distracts her, if it takes a lot of her cognitive efforts, then she'd say, oh, where was I? She has to, you know, think. So there's a large advantage to retrievers that don't take a lot of cognitive attention, especially verbal. You know, most of the time we think in words. So this is a cognitive test. We used the dual task paradigm, which means that we gave them a secondary task while they're retrieving, okay? So we gave them a list of words, we asked them either to search or to navigate, and then we asked them, okay, can you say these words? So basically what we found is people remember more words when they navigated than when they search, because they had to think of a search term, and this involved verbal thinking. But you might say, okay, so I understand, but why? Why do they want, why is search involve verbal thinking? And why, well, why navigation doesn't involve verbal thinking? So we were thinking, and this is the other study I want to talk about, we were thinking about that it has neurological reasons. Because we navigated in this world, you know, for millions of years, and we have cognitive systems and neurological systems that help us map the world, cognitive maps. So, and it's the same for us as for like monkeys, dogs, and even pigeons, okay? Like the parahippocampus. So we thought that that we might use these systems to navigate for files as well. I'll give you a better picture, okay? So we put people in fMRI. I'm saying it as though it's simple, it's very difficult. You know, I can tell you about it if you want in another time. We put people in fMRI and ask them to navigate and to search. And basically, this is what we found. This is like the Broca's area. It was used for search. This Broca's area is, you know, we use it to speak. People uniquely use it to speak. And this is like the limbic system. With the parahippocampus. So basically, the same place that we navigate in the real world, we use it for the navigation in the virtual world. Okay? So here we reach the all-time low peak of the talk. Because you might say, you know, what do you want from us? It was like a sunny day in Seattle, which is very rare, I know. And you started to rain on us. You said there's problems in PIM. OK. Now search, not the solution. OK, tags, not really. Jim, no. So what do you want? Like, so from here, I can only go up, OK? So this is the promise. So what I wanted to show you has to do with defining the problem. What is the big problem in PIM? And I think it's a design problem, because I think that PIM systems are designed like any other information systems. When you have like libraries, web pages, you know, where you have like an information worker, and they really communicate with many various users. These users, they don't know really who they're communicating with, okay? So they must choose, they have like very different information needs and education, et cetera, very different from each other. So they have to use like very objective attributes to describe the elements there. Yeah, for example, you know, if you want to, people to go somewhere in the website, you know, to get to something, or library, you want them to get to. You can't say, you know, I like this book. On the other hand, in PIM, by definition, the same person who stores the information is the person who retrieves it later on. Okay, so you can look at PIM as a very different sort of communication. A communication between a person and him or herself at two different times, the time of storage and the time of retrieval. And the systems, the PIM system, should help them communicate through this time gap. To do that, they can use subjective attributes as well as objective ones. You don't have to just be restricted to objective attributes. Now, this is very abstract. I'll be a bit less abstract in a bit, and then I'll be very concrete. So I'll give you just, I'll just talk about the subjective approach. It's like the first approach developed specifically for PIM design. It's not imported from outside. And it doesn't attempt to replace folders, but it does attempt to improve them a bit. And basically, OK, I said that they should rely to use subjective attributes. In what way? So I'll give you one example of a subjective attribute, which is importance. What is important for me, like, for example, my files or you know, are very important for me, have no significance for you guys, and the other way around. So this is very subjective, meaning that it's user-dependent. Okay? So the problem is with things of low importance. Okay? Because you have like a lose-lose situation here. If you delete them, you might find that you need them later on. You can always think of a situation where you need this information. But if you keep everything, then it competes for your attention and obscure other stuff you're looking for. Okay? So this is a lose-lose situation. And to get out of this lose-lose situation, we thought of the demotion principle. The demotion principle suggests the system should allow users to demote information items, making it less than, but keep it in the same context, not like archive it somewhere else, but keep it in the same context. So this is like a win-win situation. It will not compete for attention, but will be available in the same context if needed. This is like different from high-important things. Like high-important things, you know, there is designs for that. For example, you can put stuff on your desktop, OK? very simple. So, or like in mobile phones, you have like a short list of, you know, spars of people that you call all the time, you put it. But this is like the fast lane. This is something else from like the demotion principle, which is the very slow lane. Because if these are in the road, they slow everything down, okay? And there's lots of these. Most of the information is somewhere in between. So this was all very abstract. I'll give example of concrete things. I meant to be abstract because it will be used in very different ways, as I will show now. So this is something Ed and I did together. 2008, I think. 2009. It's called Gray Area. And what we basically did, we had a small improvement of the folder, which is this gray area on the bottom. And you can just drag and drop things that you think are relatively unimportant to this gray area. Now, if you know, it doesn't compete for your attention. If you want it, you can still. I mean, it doesn't compete for attention for things that you're looking for. But if you really want to find it, it's there, you know. And there's this scroll that it doesn't grow larger. So we tested it, and basically we found that when people are using gray area, there's less clutter in the upper stage. Which makes sense because people found it much easier to delete, to demote than to delete. To delete, they think, should I delete it? Shouldn't I delete it? Maybe I could use it. And just thinking about it takes time and cognitive efforts which you wanted to save, right? But demoting is not critical. Okay, I demote it if I find it, I need it. No, I put it back in. It's not like deleting. And people. You know, large majority of participants said that they want it in the next operating system. And by the way, we deliberately didn't patent any of these. We wanted, you know, you guys, any company, to take it on. And as a designer, I don't want any money. I don't want. Like credit, I just want users to use it. It will be, then I'll be happy. I know that's not that easy, but maybe it will work like in some way in the future. So this next time is next thing is about versions. There's this version problem. We create version over version. For example, we create a paper and then improve it. We don't want to throw the old stuff away because maybe in chapter 4. Which we already deleted, we'll just take one thing out of it, and if we delete it, it's not there for us. But so we keep people tend to keep all the versions, but they really want to go just to the latest one, most of the time. So this is like a perceptual way, instead of cognitive way, to look, is it this version, that version, etc. We wanted to be a perceptual way that they just look and spot, this is the latest version perceptually, by demoting all the others. Okay, just the first one was like direct manipulation. This is automatically demote all each version when we have a newer one, By the way, I did it with a person from Microsoft Israel. Now in Seattle, Odadeliada. I did it in a nice way that you can find even if it's not in this folder, you can right click and find it, and you can find it even if it's like in your email. Somebody sent it to you, you still be able to get to the latest version. So this is like an automatic way to demote. Another demotion relates to cellular phones. We have lots of contacts which we don't use for a long time. In this research, we found that half of the contacts people don't use for 6 months or over. Half of their contacts. Now, in mobile phones, they don't just compete for the limited attention that we have. They also compete for the limited screen size. You know, we want to put it in our pocket. So what we did here is we automatically demoted contacts which we don't use by pocketing them on the bottom of the list. They're still there if they want to. And like, if you like, it's an emergency thing, you can put it up there if you can undemote. But basically, you first choose the choose the things that you use, and we tested it, and really people got to their contacts faster, to the contacts they're really using faster with less clicks than, you know, when it's not there. Another thing that we did, we're now doing, has to do with pictures. This is like we develop it and are now testing it. People take lots of pictures. Sometimes they just to make sure they take of the same thing over and over. And this really clutter the folders with pictures which are boringly similar to each other. So just like cards, put them one behind the other to recognize the new duplication. It hides them one behind the other, and then if you want, you can just open it like you open cards and look at these pictures. So this is something we're testing now. So basically, I was talking just about the importance principle, the demotion, but there are other principles which I don't have the time, but you can read about it in the book. With other implementation, most of them were tested with positive results. So I'll just wrap it up. So we saw that there are several alternatives to folders, search, tags, and gym, and we saw that they're less promising than people thought in the beginning. We also looked at why people prefer folders. We looked at cognitive reasons and even neurological reasons for folder navigation preferences. And then I introduced the user subjective approach with the demotion principle, and I showed some demonstrations of how it can be implemented. Okay, so thank you very much. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to, including the people online.
There's a question from a fellow online. We might as well start with that.
Okay.
And basically, what they wanted to know is the suggestion is that current search capabilities with tags, et cetera, are not really even helping that much in the modern things. And what he wanted to know was part of the problem is that, like, say, in OneNote, they require exact matching. Mm-hmm. Or the tags that you enter, et cetera. And so what they wanted to know is, are there any search engines or for PIM that do smarter NLP techniques, do things like synonyms or spell correction, stuff like that? Are you familiar with any of those? And do you think that would solve any of these problems?
I think Jamie may help me with this. Do you know of any? NLP sort of search engines that use like familiar things and not exact things?
For tags
or any search, like search words. I'm not familiar. I'll say two things. One is I'm not familiar, and I think it's a good idea because, if it's the fire escape, you want the best fire escape. So if you're not, you don't really recall the exact search word and you want to be around it and the search engine, then it's great, then it's fine. But to show the burden of proof is really on the people who are for search, because if we have a new search engine, they're always new search engines, and they're always improving. But if the burden of proof is just to show, okay, search is now over 50% or more than navigation. So that's about it. I'm all for it. I think it's a good idea. Yeah.
Can you speak to how often people reorganize their folder structures typically? I mean, you mentioned that people do that, but you know, how frequently, like, do people maybe split a folder or merge folders or do things like that? Because I can imagine that's heavier or harder to do with folders than tags, where if you want to, you know, change something, you just add a new tag. This is why, like, I think it's similar to CSS, where you get, like, you all use all your tons of classes, and your CSS docs can get really out of whack because you have all sorts. You just can add a new tag for something when you, instead of reorganizing your tag structure.
Yeah. So basically, you're asking out. There's two things that you're saying. One is you're saying that how often people reorganize things. I don't have like exact. I think. Answer for you. I think people vary a lot. Regarding this. Some people are very, you know, very neat. They want to organize everything. They reorganize, and one of the participants are really working in that. This is like part of my job. It takes a lot of effort, and then the retrieval is, of course. Faster. Some people say, okay, I'll throw it anywhere and I'll just find it. And then the retrieval usually is slower. So this is basically a trade-off. The other thing you were asking about, what?
Filers and piles, exactly.
The other thing you were asking about comparing to tags, because you're saying that it's easier with tags.
So, what? I mean, in the sense that you can, instead of moving an object from one folder to another, creating a new folder, you can just tag it with a new tag to capture the change you're trying to make.
Yes, but the other thing is, this is like an advantage of course, but the other disadvantages of tags, including something William Jones found, that people usually go, you know, to place and look for things there.
Yes, now,
yeah, so. And if it's not there, they look somewhere else. And with tagging, they looked and said, okay, I look at all this stuff, and now I'm going somewhere else, and this stuff also there as well. So, so there are advantages and disadvantages of tags other than, you know, which are different than folders, advantages and disadvantages. Yes.
I'm interested. You talked about sort of is this a habit or not, and you went to some neurological evidence that maybe this is something deeper. But I've noticed this throughout time. As you get sort of improvement in technology, when it reaches a certain threshold, you still have the old habits. But for instance, I almost never use voice search. But I'm starting to use it because I've got Alexa at home. It's good enough, and it's changing my habits. And now I'm starting to use voice search more elsewhere. So I'm wondering if you have any instinct of saying, well, you know, it's not good enough yet. A lot of people have suggested that. It's getting a little better. We're doing other strategies, maybe fuzzy search. Or is it, you know, this is just more fundamental and we're really going to stick with this?
Well, it's a matter of opinion. You know, again, it's a matter of, you know, the burden of proof. It's, you know, when you know, people change their habit and people will, it will happen, you know, it will be proven otherwise. But I think it's like a more, there's two things why I'm thinking it's a deeper thing. The thing is, one is that there was a very big change in search. I'm just not just saying it was really big and fundamental change with no change in search percentage at all. If you could extrapolate that, you know, I think that's one thing. The other thing is that we gambled when we, you know, to put a person in an fMRI, it's like $1,000. So think of it's a big gamble, and we thought that it was something fundamental, brain wise, neurological wise, meaning that it has to do with what we are and how evolution. Got us in this world, turned us into what we are. We're basically using the same brain structure that our ancestors did for like navigating to, okay, think of like a dog digging for a bone and then remembering where to go to the bone. So it's so these are the two reasons. One of the things that I have to say about this is that this is not just to do with PIM. Just forget about PIM. This is just a think. This is like an example of how our neurological system, which is very old and haven't changed for hundreds of thousands of years, really determines how we use very modern technology. So maybe there are other examples that have to do with PIM as well. There was another question. Yeah.
So you opened this talk discussing the way that we organize files and such, going back as far as MS-DOS and then through the years. These days, and in those days, you know, my whole digital world was the computer in front of me. These days, I feel like I'm even less organized than I was before with stuff on my smartphone, stuff on my tablet, stuff in like Dropbox or OneDrive. And it's not just my one system anymore. And I'm wondering if you could comment on how does changing landscape might change some of the story, or whether or not we have the tools we need to do personal information management in this sort of cluttered and.
So it's true. It's multiple devices, but think if the other thing is that it's on the cloud too. So if things are organized in the cloud and I reach them through my mobile and not through my computer, it's organized in the same way. So in this way, there's like an advantage. But this is one of the big problems that that I didn't get to talk much about, like how there's like various different collections and people can't get the way around them. And there are several attempts to do it, but this is like it reminds me of a science fiction story. You know, you want to put it in one place. Like, for example, why not? But there are several things like this, which reminds me of a science fiction story which I read when I was a teenager. I don't remember the name of the author now. I'll take 2 minutes to tell you this science fiction story. It says it's like in the far future, humanity is all around the galaxies, okay? And they're always fighting each other. It's religious fights. There's 1,000 religions around the galaxy, and each claiming to be the one and only true religious. So they say, okay, we can't have it. You know, people are getting killed. We get like a wise man from each religion. We put them in like in one planet, and they talked for a year about, you know, what religious means. And, you know, they took elements from each religion, and they made a new religion, which integrated all these religions, these 1,000 religions. And it was really a true enlightened religion with all these elements. And it was a big moment in the history of the galaxy, because by then there was not 1,000 religions in the galaxy. There were 1,000 there were, yeah, you guess it, right. So there's like all these attempts to put things together, but you have to remember it's there, but it's also there. It's more cognitive load, not less. Yeah.
So I have a question. You brought up something early on about this. I've never heard the word GIM before, but group
information management, yeah.
Is the idea, right? And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you think that this subjective approach would apply into this group information management. Because it's now, I mean, you still are stuck with the sense that I'm managing information for other people, and they have to model somehow an intelligible way to organize things for my colleagues as well. And I'm not a professional information manager, librarian. So it's a smaller group, so it's not quite the same as being, you know, an ontologist for Yahoo or whatever. but at the same time, you still have this issue. I'm wondering if you could address a little bit how you think this user-subjective approach would apply into that.
So I was saying that this is like uniquely for PIM, and by saying this, you know, when people are organizing things from themselves, they're much more free to do whatever they want and not to communicate that to other people. For example, there was like a participant of mine, he was like a designer, and it was like there was a folder saying Ben and Jerry there. So I asked him, you know, why Ben and Jerry? What you don't do, you like in hospital equipment? What does the ice cream? So no, it's like I have these two clients. One is called Jeremiah and one's Benjamin, so I call it Ben and Jerry. So another person wouldn't understand it. It's idiosyncratic. So I think it's the subjective approach is of little use outside of PIM. There is borderline things, like, for example, husband and wife, they put notes on the fridge. Is it PIM? Is it Jim? It's like borderline sort of thing. It's like small group. Maybe it can be a bit useful. But basically, it's just designed for PIM, in the borders of PIM. You had a question, yeah.
Yeah, the metaphor for file systems has always been tree view, effectively. So given the observations fact that we are a spatial creature, and I would also throw in temporal as well.
Yeah.
Are there examples of interfaces that use those metaphors better, you know, for file systems?
Other devices that use other metaphors?
Yes, that use the spatial.
Spatial metaphors.
Yeah.
There are several attempts, like three-dimensional stuff. I didn't see, like, it wasn't, most of them weren't empirically tested. They just developed, and I didn't see any commercial success in that. But yeah, maybe, I'm not saying that it's a dead end. I'm just, maybe we just didn't make it yet. There is a potential there, yeah.
There was some work by Brad Meyer called Feldspar, which was sort of about retrieving things by, I looked at that after the CHI conference in Denver.
Yeah, the context.
Do you know what, I mean, I'm just curious because I haven't been following it. Has anything happened or followed on onto that or developed from that? Or?
It's hard. I'll tell you, it's hard to do things in PIM. First of all, I think the context thing, putting things in context, and there's like a user-subjective principle related to that, which context, etc. I didn't have time to talk about it. This is a great idea. I think people are in good direction, including this work, which I like. But there's a problem in PIM because you do that experiment, you develop things. Nowadays people test it. They use not to test it, but now people. It's demand to be tested, which is good. You test it, and okay, what's next? There's like a division between industry and research, which I find problematic. I mean, if I deliberately didn't patent it, didn't want anything, you know, any money, any credit, don't want anything, and still the company didn't take it on. So there's a problem here, and there's like proof, like research, very hard statistical proof there. So, other questions? Yeah.
One of the things you mentioned in the book is about the act of retrieval being a communication with your former self and trying to anticipate the context and needs at that time. Another thing you mentioned was the husband and wife putting post-its on the fridge. Which is a contrast to your notion of demoting content, which is less important, which is a way of classifying the slow lane, right? Do you have any thoughts on strategies for more the fast lane type of approach where you're using modern tools such as to-dos or reminders to cross that bridge in time to set a reminder to do a task on a specific file? Do you have any?
Yes, I think that I call it like the promotion versus the demotion principle. Yeah, so it's. I think this is. People realize that this is not new. People realize, and it's there's several things, like putting things on desktop as an ancient post-it, or you know, when you have like recent files or history, you go back to things. You usually go back to things that are more relevant, that just you happen to retrieve earlier on. People go do that all the time. So these sort of things has been explored. I'm not saying that like there's no potential here to be explored, but this is really people really feel that, you know, I want to get to the most important things. This was explored in design and will be explored further. I think the new thing, the new edge thing that I was trying to show here is the motion, which is like the other way around.
So I want to get an opinion from you. I've got my own opinion on this, but I want to know, like, one of the things that is enormous amount of work is going into right now is on various AI approaches for managing a lot of these kinds of information problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to get your sense as to how successful you think some of these more like artificial intelligence kinds of approaches are versus a more user subjective approach where you're actually having to annotate.
I have a funny story about that because this has to do with, I think, group management. Because you're talking about like automatic storage. Like, for example, I don't have to organize my stuff. The computer, the AI system knows its way around. It knows me just by looking at what I do, and then it can classify things for me. Now, I had these two participants that were like boyfriend and girlfriend. They were using the same laptop. And he was like an artist, a musician. He put everything on the desktop. Well, she wanted to be nice to him, so she organized everything neatly into folders. Do you think he liked it? No. And 2 weeks after I interviewed them, they split. I'm not saying because of that. I'm not saying it's just because of that. But really, he was thinking, I put it there, so why isn't it there where I put it? So, and she's much more intelligent. You know, she does it very exact, and because of she's being human, then any machine can do it in the near future. But it's not about being exact. It's just about remembering, you know, being active. If somebody else does it for you, you're not active. You don't have the record of the event of that you put it, and doesn't help you. Well, if you're active, you repeatedly go there, you put it there, you know, and you keep going back to it in each retrieval, then you remember it. Basically, it's your own stuff. I mean, people can remember easily their own stuff, and it's very different than like remembering the whole web, for example. So if like remember one thing from this talk is that PIM is a different sort of game than other information management. That's it. Jamie, yes.
Isn't in some way, though, all personal information management an act, a social act or a group act? I mean, I think of, I like the metaphor that William used once about talking about like, oh, I brush my teeth and I do that to take care of my own teeth, but I also do it so that my breath doesn't smell when I kiss my wife in the morning or
okay.
Something like that. And I wonder, you draw a very sharp division between personal information management and group information management. And I was wondering if you think it's that sharp.
This is a matter of definitions and opinions. It's fine. I know there's this gray area between, for example, a husband and wife putting things in the fridge. Is it personal or is it group? It's like just two people. But the fact that there is things that are are gray doesn't mean there's like white and black. Meaning that there's, I think some. This is just my opinion, but some of the information is personal, and then you can be really idiosyncratic about. You just put it and remember where it was, and you remember all the little jokes about it, etc. Where if you organize even the same information for other people, you really have to be you know, to put it there so they can find it. It's a different way of thinking. I think that's my impression of, you know, my participants, but there can be like different views about it, of course.
All right. Let's take over. Thank you.